he exclaimed with a thrill of hope, for in the voice, the eye, the hand that held the card with such tenacious touch, he saw and felt the influence of a stronger nature, and involuntarily believed in and clung to it. "You're a bad angel, you might say, since it was the man who damned your book and refused the aid you asked of him," returned the stranger in a suave tone which contrasted curiously with the vigor of his language. "A mere chance led me there today, and my eye fell upon a letter lying open before him. The peculiar hand attracted me, and Forsyth, being in the midst of your farewell denunciation, read it out and told me your story." "And you were laughing at my misery while I was making ready to end it?" said the youth, with a scornful quiver of the sensitive lips that uttered the reproach. "We all laugh at such passionate folly when we have outlived it. You will, a year hence, so bear no malice, but tell me briefly, if you can forget poetry and be content with prose for a time. In plain words, can you work instead of dream?"
"I can."
"Good. Then come to me for a month. I have been long from home, and my library is neglected. I have much for you to do, and believe you are the person I want, if Forsyth tells me the truth. He says your father was a Greek, your mother English, both dead, and you an accomplished, ambitious young man who thinks himself a genius and will not forgive the world for doubting what he has failed to prove. Am I right?"
"Quite right.
Add also that I am friendless, penniless, and hopeless at 19. A brief, pathetic story, more eloquently told by the starvation written on the pinched face, the squalor of the scanty garments, and the despair in the desperate eye, then by the words uttered with almost defiant bluntness. The stranger read the little tragedy at a glance, and found the chief actor to his taste, for despite his hard case he possessed beauty, youth, and the high aspirations that die hard, three gifts often peculiarly attractive to those who have lost them all. "Wait a month, and you may find that you have earned friends, money, and the right to hope again. At 19, one should have courage to face the world and master it."
"Show me how, and I will have courage. A word of sympathy has already made it possible to live."
And seizing the hand that offered help, Canaris kissed it with the impulsive grace and ardor of his father's race. "When can you come to me?" briefly demanded Hellwise, gathering his cloak about him as he rose, warned by the waning light.
"At once, tonight, if you will. I possess nothing in the world but the poor clothes that were to have been my shroud, and the relics of the book with which I kindled my last fire," answered the youth with eager eyes and an involuntary shiver as the bitter wind blew in from the broken window.
"Come, then, else a mightier master than I may claim you before dawn, for it will be an awful night. Put out your funeral pyre, Canaris. Wrap your shroud well about you. Gather up your relics and follow me."
"I can at least give you a warmer welcome than I received," added Hellwise, with that sardonic laugh of his, as he left the room.
Before he had groped his slow way down the long stairs, the youth joined him, and side by side they went out into the night. A month later, the same pair sat together in a room that was a dream of luxury. A noble library, secluded, warm, and still. The reposeful atmosphere that students love pervaded it. Rare books lined its lofty walls. Poets and philosophers looked down upon their work with immortal satisfaction on their marble countenances, and the two living occupants well became their sumptuous surroundings. Hellwise leaned in a great chair beside a table strewn with books, which curiously betrayed the bent of a strong mind made morbid by physical suffering. Doré's Dante spread its awful pages before him. The old Greek tragedies were scattered about, and Goethe's Faust was in his hand. An unimpressive figure at first sight, this frail-looking man, whose age it would be hard to tell, for pain plays strange pranks and sometimes preserves to manhood a youthful delicacy in return for the vigor it destroys. But at a second glance, the eye was arrested and interest aroused, for an indefinable expression of power pervaded the whole face, beardless, thin-lipped, sharply cut, and colorless as ivory. A stray lock or two of dark hair streaked the high brow, and below shone the controlling feature of this singular countenance, a pair of eyes intensely blue.